monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, say it again, Shal. This is AJ of InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Today on Cold Reality Radio, genealogy, the bloodlines that have always been in control, creating a fake reality, a false reality for us all of us commoners, us, our subjects to the Crown Corporation. My co-host today / guest, Clint Richardson of the Corporation Nation. We're going to get into some pretty fantastical information, but it can all be provable, and it pretty much has been. And the reason why we're finding out about a lot of this genealogy now is because they just want us to finally know that we're being dominated by a bloodline family. So today is Sunday, April 3rd, 2016. We're already into the fourth month of the year. And as the world spins out of control, we're pretty much going to find out why, even more. I mean, we know that, but we're going to find out why the world is going and has always gone in the direction that it has, because we got a bunch of sick bastards who think that they have the right to rule over us, in control and in power. And we're going to talk about these fantastical things today and come along for the ride as we listen to my personally created intro music. Actually, I think it's kind of cool. All right, so Clint, we have you.
Yes.
Good morning.
Frog in my throat. Greetings.
How's everything?
Everything's good.
All right. Okay, so I am, you know, learning more and more about, you know, this genealogy. And when I speak about it, when I talk to people that I work with, that, you know, Obama is related to George Washington. The presidents are related to George Washington. They just can't even believe it. They look at me like I'm some kind of alien from another planet. And they just can't even believe that I would say something so unbelievable. So unbelievable. Why would he say that? And it turns out that, you know, I'm just one of many that have over time, you know, has picked up on these things. And thanks to researchers like Clint on a vast number of topics, vaccines, the true nature, the cult of the Constitution, which doesn't apply to us, I've become a more enlightened, more well informed person. I mean, scratch the person, a man. I've been a more well-informed man. So, Clint, welcome today. Late yesterday, or somewhere, I think it was Friday or Saturday, you sent me it was like a 5 or 6 hour audio of some of your early podcasts, not on RBN, but you did. I'm not sure what other network that you were on, or you just created it yourself and put it out there. A World Without Gray, I believe it was called.
Yeah, it was just a few shows I was trying to do with April Rain. I don't know if you know April Rain, but she started a little network, or tried to start a little network, but it just
right.
It was a lot of trouble to get on and get logged in, and you had to control everything, and I was just like, eh.
It sounded good. I mean, it had a good. You know, good podcast sound.
That was actually before I truly understood the nature of genealogy and what purpose it had, and which is to say, it was before I understood the nature of marriage. You know, because marriage is sold to us as something very vulgar. Now you marry because you're in love. Well, that's not at all. And you know, how many movies have you watched where people are being forced to be married? They have to marry their cousin, or they have to marry a baron somewhere in another nation or country or whatever, and they're forced into marriage. We all know about interbreeding. Well, why are they interbreeding? And no one ever stopped to ask, well, wait. You know, it's one thing to say they do this, but it's a whole other thing to say why do they. What is the purpose of marriage, if not, of course, to build an estate, to leave things to your future generations, right? What's the purpose of creating a country? Well, of course, it's to create a posterity, a sovereignty, and leave that country to your children with all its slaves, right? I mean, over and over, you see that the reasons for many things that we do today without even any kind of forethought or any kind of meditation, we find all stems back to heraldry, all back to arms, bloodline, that kind of, you know, all these words mean the same thing. So it's actually ridiculous not to consider that. We are just a ridiculous people who have been so dumped down, and yet we think we're so smart, right? We know the way things are. We know the way things are. We're Americans. Well, actually, I'm starting to really think that we are the stupidest people on earth.
Yeah, I was saying that a little while ago, that every day as we move forward and we do not realize what is happening, we are getting just further and further dumbed down. We are going to end up in a Mike Judge's movie, Idiocracy, where we're just like grunting to communicate and just all kinds of just things that, I mean, obviously you saw that movie, so you know We are already there in some semblance, you know, like 50% of the way there. And you can see it every day, especially people like yourself who have gone through. And I think you said I was able to listen to probably about 4 hours of that entire podcast. And then when your archives, when Drew made your archives available on the spreadsheet, I saw genealogy in the list, and I was just like, I got to check this out because I know that there's more to this. And if there's more to it, Clint's going to find out what it is, and he's going to do the research, and he's going to put his information out there, and it's very powerful. So I think it was like 2.5 shows that you did on genealogy. But then again, after communicating with you late this week, this, 5-6 hour podcast that I was able to break away from it just because last night I went and I was doing some jamming. We played, over in Tacony over there. And then when I got back, I listened to it. And, this morning when I got up, I started listening to more of it just to fully understand. Cause I thought this was actually before your shows that you did on RBN. So it was even more comprehensive. Your research and it was a treat to hear some of your early podcast and the passion in your voice in these early podcasts. And sadly, as we've gotten to when we started getting into the 400 episodes and everything, you could hear a certain it's like you said to me, you said we have to understand that we've been defeated.
Yeah.
And I can hear it in your voice, but it hasn't stopped you from being here with me today. So thank God for that. It's information that can really, it can really get you down. It can really make you, when you understand when you realize that we're just being dominated. So this started on a low note, but we can only go up from there. So the presidents, and I mean, and I've gotten into the point now where I'm sitting here, I'm watching a show called Finding Your Roots. And it's all going full circle. It's all circling back. And there's John McCain, and he's on there, and he's being interviewed by the host of the show. And they're talking about this stuff. And I said, I'm waiting for the big moment. And it gets down to the very end of the show. And there's one more page in this book that they created for John McCain, having him on the program. And I said, that's George Washington on the other side of that page. That's George Washington. And sure enough, turn the page. And he says, John, you're related to George Washington. And he was like, oh, you know, that, you know, docile little murdering filth, senator from Arizona. And he pretended to not know that he's part of this bloodline.
Pretends to not be George Bush's cousin, pretends not to be Hillary Clinton's cousin, pretends to, oh, that's shocking. Really? Tell me.
Exactly. And, so breaking down some of this, when we say bloodline, a lot of people that blows them away, even hearing that Barack Obama, you know, being a man of color, that he could actually be related to George Washington and related to William the Conqueror and all of these people throughout history that have been of those who have the right to rule or thought that they had the right to rule. And it wasn't even a matter of them thinking that they had the right to rule. They did rule over people, and they did dominate and destroy and crush people while bringing themselves up and empowering their own lives and the lives of their family.
There's a very important aspect to this, that one of the ways that we have been utterly, utterly controlled is, of course, to cause us to fight amongst ourselves. And so we have, the vulgar, low sort of argument between us, between race, right?
Right.
We have race war, basically. It again, it turns out we were all basically lowered to the same level. So there is no black, white, gray, whatever you are, you're basically the same voluntary subject. You know, you're involuntary slavery, basically. And the important thing about being a white person, you know, there's other legal terms that begin with white. You have white rents, which were rents that are paid in silver or instead of gold. You have white acre, which is a fictitious sort of piece of land just kept for books, right? You have all kinds of things that begin with the name or the word white. And so what they did was they turned that and they said, oh, well, let's turn the blacks against the whites and the Mexicans against the whites and this against the whites and right, everything against the European white, right? So, but really what white persons means is something very different. It has to do only with blood. It has nothing else to do with anything except how they define it in their terms of art, right? Mm-hmm. So when we read, in just going to Black's Fourth, and we read about what a white person is, and I'm saying this because I'm telling you that Barack Obama is a white person. We don't have a black president. We have a white person as president. Why is he a white person? Because of his blood, not because of his skin. And we'll see that defined as we read this definition. This is the courts, again, you know, telling us. Members of the white or Caucasian race is distinct from the black, red, yellow, and brown races. Now, that is a general term that you would find in any scientific study. It's not to be taken as anything but exactly that. It's a specific description of a specific race. They used to call them Caucasoid and Mongoloid, and there's two others, I think, right? All right, so that has nothing to do with what a white person is quite yet. When we get into it, then we'll see. Whether the applicant for the United States citizenship is a white person, quote-unquote, again, a legal term, not a real term, eligible for citizenship under statute enumerating classes of people eligible therefore, depends not upon ethnological classification of group to which he belongs, but upon whether members of such group with characteristics existing in 1790, when statute was first enacted, were intended by Congress to be classified as white persons. Well, okay, so what was their classification way back when? In a specific case and statute, the statute uses the words white persons as meaning primarily the European peoples. Now, when we use words like peoples, we literally mean families, who constituted the class from which virtually all of immigration to the United States has come and who readily became assimilated into our civilization. Now, it goes and it says that it excludes a Hindu, it excludes a Mongolian, it excludes a native-born Filipino, Afghanistan, Arab, etc., etc., etc. So it's making that distinction. In the legislation of the slave period, persons without admixture of colored blood. Listen to that again. In the legislation of the slave period, persons without admixture of color of blood, whatever the actual complexion might be. That is the definition of a white person. A person without admixture of colored blood. Whatever the actual complexion might be. That's telling you that Barack Obama, who appears for all intents and purposes to be a quote-unquote black man, his complexion does not matter. His admixture of colored blood or pure blood is what matters. So we go and we find out who his father and his mother was, and we've discussed that before. The Dunham clan coming from a Jewish mother, and Jews, by the way, were very welcomed into this country, which was kind of surprising, actually. And so in South Africa...
Why does that surprise you that they were welcome?
Because of the reputation.
Okay. Well, and, to be like that has been swept under the rug in some senses, but...
I think that we have to realize that one of the things that I talked about in that thing is I'm looking at every single Hollywood actor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing the blood relation. I'm seeing every single actor that ever makes it into any position where they'd have an actual, you know, voice, you know.
And they changed their name as well.
Your Clooney's, your Matt Damon's, these are all royalty. I mean, I hate to acknowledge that word or give it respect, but these people, they are absolutely 100%, you know, they might as well be brothers, all of these people. They're cousins, but they're it's just one big happy family. And the thing is, some of them say they're Jewish, some of them don't. They all have that Jewish blood. That's my concern, is that those who are actually ruling in this country... Patrick Jordan did a lot of study on who's Jew and who's not. It's like almost there's no. It's not an ethnic thing as much as it is a mental, a blood thing, if you will. In other words, it's not of a nation. It's of a blood. And all these people are related. Most of the actors in Hollywood, of course, are Jewish, and yet their first cousin somehow is not Jewish, and that doesn't make any sense to me. So basically, I'm looking at this. You know, everybody says, quote unquote, you know, the Jews control Hollywood, the Jews this, the Jews that, the Jews this. I don't think we really realize what we're saying when we say that. I don't think we really realize that every CEO, every actor, every philanthropist, every billionaire, every politician that is, you know, high up are all part of the same family. Because it's not going to be any other way.
Right. And you said one time, you said either they're all Jews or none of them are Jews.
Yeah, that's
of your findings, obviously, as you know, you've grown through, learning more about things that you, with all the deception going out there, you constantly have to revise and say, and I've done it myself, like, we understand something or we think that we understand something, and then you find out it was just another deception. And I think that when I heard some of your RBN genealogy podcast, you said that one thing, which was very powerful, either they're all Jews or none of them are Jews. And then you said it at some point, it doesn't even really matter. This is a bloodline thing.
Well, see, that's just a title. And see, I've learned not to respect titles. Okay. I've learned not to respect, words that describe people. When I say a Jew, people get turned off. They don't want to listen anymore. We're talking about a family who are in basically a bunch of slaveholders, landholders and slaveholders. And when I go and I read, I also found out there's one very important thing about this people, as we call it, this state. And that is that while the Torah might be their book, when you actually look up the word Talmud, and the Talmud is the important one, it says that that is their law. That's their foundation of law. It's much different to say you have a religious book compared to what your law is. So the Talmud is actually... the thing we should be considering. And when you go through the Talmud and you really understand what it's saying, you see that we fit right into the very tenets of the goyim, the slave that is mentioned. That is, as you said in the beginning, we are defeated and we are here to serve the Jew. That is their whole outlook on life. That is their whole goal, is to get to enslave an entire race to, you know, or all the races to basically serve. That's the Talmudic way. Now, this is not being, you know, saying, oh, he's prejudiced or he's going to do this. This has nothing to do with that, man. This is just reality. This is just the way the actual, you know, documentation, the actual, whoever, these rabbis, quote unquote, that wrote this stuff, were sick. It's sick stuff, you know. They portrayed Jesus Christ as boiling in a pot of excrement in hell for the rest of his whatever, for infinity, you know.
Right.
This is the sickness of the society. And if you cannot see the sickness of our society, then there's a real problem with you, not with any, you know, not with me or not. We're in a very, very sick society. But I want to make sure that this is very understood, again, that persons without the mixed blood are the ones that we're talking about. We're talking about whatever the complexion may be. Again, Barack Obama, the perfect example. Whatever the complexion might be, it's only the blood. When we say colored, we mean blood, not skin color. And if the people out there would actually just realize that in the Civil War era, when we looked at who was owning the slaves, we found that in places like Louisiana, down in New Orleans, you had many more black slaveholders, black as black can be, black slaveholders than you had white slaveholders. In fact, there was only about little over 1% of the entire population of whites, who most of which were servants, slaves themselves, or what they called white slaves, indentured servants, etc. Only about 1% of white people ever had slaves, and those were the bloodline. Those were these people who had these massive plantations. Another word for plantation is colony, farm, right? So we have to understand that the entire population of quote-unquote white people, as far as complexion, is being blamed for essentially what Jewish authors have actually uncovered, is that the Jews, quote-unquote, actually owned all the slave ships. Mm-hmm. It was a Jewish slave trade, right? And the black people in Africa and the black traders in America were responsible for the slave trade, yet the whole thing has been used to divide and conquer both colors, if you will, even though we're equal we're all in the same boat. We're all in the same slave. So this whole race war, this whole bullshit about race needs to go away. We need to realize, again, we're all a defeated people. We're one people. We're one blood. And if we ever get to the point where we realize that the only blood that matters is the figurative, if you will, blood of Christ, well, shit, then we're going to be a fucking power to be reckoned with.
There you go. So along the way, we've been kind of detoured with the birth certificate, and we find out that, you know, that really has very little relevance. And it was, I mean, when you look at it, even my cousin at one point, we met up at this one, actually it was the death of one of my cousins. And he said, listen, I downloaded this birth certificate. And of course, some thought it was inappropriate that we were talking about Obama at the time, but, you know, whatever, fuck him. So we're sitting there, we're talking about it, and he said, this is a Photoshop thing. This is not right. He said, I would have no reason. He said, I don't like Obama, but I would have no reason to, you know, want to download this for nefarious. I just wanted to take a look at it because I heard it was an issue. And he said, this was a Photoshop. This had layers, and it's not legitimate. So I was like, so that's pretty interesting. And then you find out later that the book that that Obama supposedly wrote, Dreams of My Father, turns out to be another fiction regarding him, because we're seeing now that Dreams of My Real Father, now whether you want to trust Joel Gilbert, filmmaker, he really does put some information out there that is very, very credible. And if you want to Google that, Dreams of My Real Father, you'll see the cover of the DVD, where on the left is Obama's supposed father, the father that they want us to believe that is his father. And on the right side is a man by the name of Frank Marshall Davis. And in Obama's so-called writings, I think that, you know, he's a fictional character. And somebody said, this is who you are. We wrote this book about you. Read it. Know what your role is and how you're going to act in this fake, you know, for the commoner's fake reality. And then you look at Frank Marshall Davis and you're like, man, that totally looks like that could be his father. And then I'm sitting there and I'm like, why would this guy, because it's very weird. And as I'm going through your podcast, they were talking about, how they would take, children, or I don't think you said this, but, if this guy was a commoner and not of blood, this Frank Marshall Davis, then what relevance would Barack Obama have? He would possibly not be of that bloodline then. Would that be correct? But it turns out that he does have connections to the people on the bloodline. Is that correct from your?
It turns out that you do genealogy in different ways, you know, consanguinity and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Jewish tradition, the mother, and most people know this today, that it's what your grandmother, you know, do you have eligibility to go into the state of Israel right now? Right. Well, it depends. What's your grandmother's genealogy? Is your grandmother Jewish? Well, if your grandmother's Jewish, then yes, you can. Right. So that's nothing about the father. We should be looking at the mother, not the father.
Right.
Okay. The father. Yes, I agree. There's certainly something to be said about Frank Marshall being part of the. Again, has nothing to do with skin complexion. This is who's your father, who's your mother. So. Definitely something to be said about that, but we should be looking at the Jewish mother. That's what we should be looking at, and we should be focusing on the quote-unquote white part of Barack Obama, not the black. Just like we should be focusing on the white part of Hillary Clinton, not anything else that's admixed in there, right? We're focusing on the blood. When I say white, I don't mean anything else but blood, not skin color. That's the important thing to keep remembering, is not to go by what you see,
right,
but by what the law is.
That's something that we do. We look at something, we see the surface, and we go no further. We see something, we generate some kind of conclusion that is either unique, which is rare these days, or something that someone that we've learned along the way that we use as our determination of things, you know?
Yeah, we're pathetic. I mean, I just know we have to admit to ourselves not only that we're defeated, but how we've been defeated. How is it that we've been, you know, put into this situation where we're so busy fighting each other and infighting and doing all this, you know, stupid stuff that we never wake up and realize right outside of our little argument is one of these guys pulling our strings. We just never wake up to that point, right? Because we're so busy fighting amongst ourselves.
Right.
It's pathetic. It really. I mean,
well, it's the best way to conquer some. A group is to make them fight amongst themselves, when the real puppet master is controlling us. But I guess it's those things that we just don't want to admit, because once we admit it, then that's the ego. And you mentioned that any number of times. You said the ego is going to take over, and it's going to fight this information tooth and nail. But sooner or later, you're going to have to come to it. And I think one powerful thing that you said, I've already been through, the death of my ego. And I think that was just very powerful. Just having spoken with you and everything, I know that, we all struggle with it. I struggled with just the information that I became aware of. And of course, not knowing the full complexity of it, which, you know, I'm figuring out and finding out now. But it's been, as I said before, in our conversations on the network here, my thing has been more of a controlled demolition, where it was a slow process, not like a complete one. But because I was never truly embedded in the system, I always saw myself outside of the system. Well, that's what it is. Maybe that's, you know, where it all came from with me, because if for some reason I just always kind of felt like I was an outsider to things. So being an outsider and thinking outside that group mentality, I was able to later on in life see that this is all bullshit.
I think everybody feels that way. I'll be honest with you. I think everybody feels like an outsider. It's just that some people have a talent for the lie. Some people have a talent to fit in, but everybody tries to fit in, right? I had a great quote. Oh, I don't remember what it was on. It was on some TV show, and I was like, "Wow, that was brilliant!" And it was, oh God, what was it? It was, you know, in high school, everybody tries to, you know, everybody's afraid to be different, right?
Right.
Everybody's sort of the same because it's this sort of controlled thing. And then the second high school is over, all of a sudden, everybody wants to be different.
Right.
All of a sudden, everybody says, "Oh, I could be something else," right? So you've always got, from the very beginning, we're trained to try to fit in with the group norm. So I think everybody is, and some people take the leadership role, the popularity role, the politician role, and some people are like us, where I would take the maximum days off from school I could.
Right.
So, Talmud is defined, by the way, in Black's Law. So how do we look at the Talmud compared to the Torah when it comes to the Jewish people? It says it's a work which embodies the civil and canonical law of the Jewish people. That's huge, because that is both that means the moral and the immoral law, right? That's both in one. And so the morals of this people are certainly reflected in our society. And it's pretty frightening to see what some of the things they've done as to speak to that are pretty scary in our own legislature. I want to read you something, though, man, because, you know, I put the pieces together myself, and it took a very, very long time to be able to finally, you know, put it together. And then I found this really wonderful definition in this pretty forthcoming, one of my favorite dictionaries is it's W.C. Anderson's 1889 Dictionary of Law. You can find it, you know, a copy, a PDF of it online. But this actually gave, and I can't stress this enough. I really can't stress this enough. You know, I've read quotes to you before about that a Christian a Bible reading people cannot be enslaved, right? That is one of the most important quotes in history, and I want to tell you why. I want to read you these two entries in this dictionary, because they give you a little history and they give you the court opinions and this stuff. But this is so important to understand. First of all, you have I've said that there's two forms of Christianity. One is for show. One is fake, right? One is just a title that you get because you go to a Romanized, Latinized, dog Latin church, right? You don't do anything. There's nothing about you that is comparable to Christ in the Bible at all. You don't follow God's law. You don't follow the natural law. You don't do anything except be a good little citizen and wear a little hat that says, "I'm a Christian." Basically, that, or a cross, if you will, right? That's basically an American, and most Europeans, and most, you know, anybody that calls themselves Christians, there's very few exceptions. That's the Roman pagan Christian, basically, the false title. And we see that actually explained here in this dictionary when we look up Christianity. The word Christian is one who either believes or assents to the doctrines of Christ, or who, being born of Christian parents or in a Christian country, does not profess any other religion or does not belong to anyone of the other religious divisions of man. So what I'm trying to tell everybody by saying that is that you are literally born a Christian. You don't have a choice in this country, because we are a Christian country, a Christian nation, in title only. And I've been trying to explain that the best way I could, and I never really could get that across except to say there's real and fake, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this actually goes into how that actually applies. And I was so pleased to find this. It was, of course, after. If I would have found this first, it would have helped a lot. but let's read what it says. The system of doctrines, Christianity is the system of the doctrines of precepts taught by Christ, etc., the religion founded by Christ. That, you know, that's a whole other conversation. Christianity, this is the important part. Christianity is said to be part of the common law. Okay? That's what it means. But that has also a specific meaning. So two things so far. You're born a Christian, whether you like it or not. Whether you act up to that part is why we need a secular government. If you're going to act secular, if you're going to act worldly or of the flesh, as the Bible says, then you're going to be amongst the gods of the government, the false gods, the idols of the nations. That's what you're going to be governed by. Mm-hmm. But you're not being governed by what you're supposed to be, which is, quote-unquote, a true follower of Christ. Remember that doctrine, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so no matter what, you're going to have a god. You choose which god you have by your actions, not by your professed faith, not by your baptism, this bullshit where they put water on you and pretend that that's the same as what happened to Christ with gladness, right? We're baptized with water. He was baptized with gladness, which is not a physical thing, right? Mm-hmm. So you have all this fakery going on in the church. So very important. Christianity is said to be part of the common law. In fact, it was so much in England and the early part of this country, it was so much cherished. And if you read the quotes by Noah Webster and so many others, you really start to see and understand what I'm about to say. It's so parcel to the laws of England that to reproach it, to talk badly about it, is to speak badly of the law. Okay, that's why I keep saying the Bible is the law. And if you don't know the Bible, you don't know the law. The essential principles of natural religion, of revealed religion, are part of the common law. So that's not saying that Methodism or Catholicism or any other religion is false religion, is part of the law. It's not telling you that. It's telling you the Bible. It's telling you the scriptures are part of the common law, so that any person reviling or subverting or ridiculing them may be prosecuted at common law. Now, again, I'm not telling you this is some religious freak out there trying to get you to convert to some religion. That's not my purpose here. I'm telling you, you want to be free? You want to actually ever get out of this thing? You're going to have to learn scripture and be what you're supposed to be. You cannot worship this country or be patriotic about it unless you realize, hey, this is where it's at. This is the whole purpose, the whole point of creating this system was revolved around this. And here's what it says. The true sense of this maxim is that the law will not be permitted to be... Oh, I already read that. Christianity is a part of the common law of Pennsylvania in the qualified sense that its divine origin and truth are admitted. In other words, the self-evidence of it is so obvious when you actually finally read it and understand it that you can't deny it. And that's, you know, I've come to understand that. Because it's not talking about anything but how we're supposed to act towards one another. Now, here's the important part, man. What is it not talking about when it talks about this? It says not Christianity founded upon any particular religious tenets. Okay, so there we've knocked out every denomination of religion. We're only talking about the book of law, which is the scripture, the ancient knowledge. Okay. Not founded on any particular religious tenets, but Christianity with liberty of conscience to all men. That means you got to do it yourself. You've got to play the part. The maxim does not mean that Christianity is an established religion. Again, we're not talking about any of those false religions, nor that its precepts, by force of their own authority, form part of our system of municipal law. How many times have I tried to tell people this is not a Christian nation, that we are in the nation, not the country. We're not in a state. We're in a country. We're in a nation, and the nation is a municipality called Washington, D.C., a district. That municipal law is what we're under, so it has nothing to do. In other words, there's no moral check to the law. There is no part of Scripture, Christ, whatever, that is part of the municipal law. Nor that the courts may base their judgments upon the Bible. What is that saying? That means when you go to court, if you are truly trying to be that quote-unquote person, that man of God, the courts cannot recognize it. You cannot, there is no, it, you see the difference, right? Nor that the courts may base their judgments upon the Bible, nor that religious duties, which is the negative natural law, may be penally enforced. They can't force you to be honest and have love and charity, nor that legal discrimination in favor of Christianity is allowed. And it goes on. The law does not attempt to enforce the precepts of Christianity on the grounds of their sacred character or divine origin. Though we may admit their continual, et cetera, incapable, it's incapable of enforcement by human laws. That's telling you that no government ever set up ever is going to cause man to treat man with dignity and respect. It'll cause you to contractually be obligated to do something, but it can never actually cause you to have that spirit of the natural law that everybody talks about. It's never going to be found in government. It cannot be, because the legal law, the municipal law, is opposed to all of this. These precepts, moreover, affect the heart and address themselves to the conscience, while the laws of the state can regard the outward conduct only. For which reasons Christianity, listen to this, for which reasons Christianity is not part of the law of the land in any sense which entitles the courts to take notice of and base their judgments upon it, except where the principles, the maxims of law actually copy Scripture, which most of the foundational ones do. But the principles of law always go off on a tangent and allow you to basically commit fraud. Finally, the maxim can have no reference to the law of the national government, which is what we're under, since the sources of that law are the Constitution, treaties, and acts of Congress. It's literally telling you that essentially you're going to have the public and the private. The public is going to be under the nation and under the immoral or amoral law, and you have the private people who have the conscience and the expression of this quote-unquote Christian charity, although they have totally warped it into a Jewish version. And that is I can't stress this enough. Take religion out of the picture. All the denominations, all the crap, all this weird Christian language that you hear, all the music and all the crap out there that has nothing to do with how you actually act in public. And realize that if you're ever going to be what the law considers to be immune from the law, in other words, it looks at you as a spiritual or a religious man instead of a civil of a political type, then you're going to have to learn what the law is. You're going to have to learn the Scriptures, and you're going to have to act the part. And what you discover is that means no money. You cannot respect money, persons, flattering titles, any of that stuff. You can't be surety for another, which is what we are for the United States citizenship, the person. You can't do any of these things if you're going to be freed from that municipal side, from that national side. I am telling you right now that in their sick and twisted fucking way, they have set up this United States, the nations of the world, almost as a trial, a test. You're a felony from you're a felon from birth. You're guilty of the accident of your birth. You go through process. You accept all the sin basically that they offer. All the social insurance number sin, right? You accept everything from them, and you never ever do the due diligence to find out. Everybody talks about remedy. All these gurus tell you that you can do this, you can avoid your taxes, you can do. But ultimately, there's only one way out of this tyranny, and that's to become this sort of private notion of what Christ was teaching. And I don't know how to say that in a way that is not taken as religious or doctrine or whatever. It's just the reality of how this system and how every system that is quote-unquote Christian nation or whatever, Christian country, that's how this system is set up. If you don't want to believe that, I can't do anything about it. It's right. It's in all your legal dictionaries. If you don't want to believe it, well, great. Go on being a slave. But the only way the only people that cannot be enslaved, according to so many different peoples, all the founding fathers say talk about this, is to actually start acting the part, acting in the footsteps of that one example that you have, that personified person in the Bible that is, again, the Word and the Son are the same thing. The Word means the law. The Son means the Word, right? So if you can just grasp that I don't care what paperwork you file, I don't care what you get the courts to judge you as, I don't care what you do, you're not going to be free of all of this legal crap.
Do you think that with the knowledge that you've accumulated about this system, could you actually, could you represent yourself in court for if that ever came to fruition, that you could be in court for some reason? Could you actually represent yourself like many people do? We've heard that before. I've heard that before, that people represent themselves in court. The knowledge that you have, is that knowledge? Obviously, it is power, and it frees you from, the not knowing, the ignorance of the law is no excuse, that realm. Could you do that? Could you represent yourself and or help someone else?
Well, this is where you have to learn what agency is, the law of agency, basically. And, some ridiculous huge treatise on agency that was sent to me. But basically, you cannot be, there's no reason for anyone to be in court unless they have a person, a status, in a public status, in other words. So, in other words, you're carrying around what is actually literally referred to as a demon, which we call the person, this sort of false identity that we talked about, right? And when you're going to court, you're appearing as that person. You're not yourself, because you are only the agent of that status, that person. You're only the agent of that citizenship.
Much like a professional athlete hires an agent to represent him, like that, right?
It just, to make it even more simple, an employer is the principal of his employee, which is an agent. So the agent can go out and do things on behalf of the principal. Well, a citizen is the citizen is the it gets a little convoluted because you have the master and servant thing. So you're the master, the shipmaster of the citizenship, which would be the subject, master and servant. But when it comes to what you actually are, you're on a rented ship, so your principal the one who assigns you this person, this status in their system, that's your government. The government is the agent of the people, which is the principle of the government. We are the agents of the government, which is our principle. Does that make sense?
So it's just like kind of like a pyramid thing where, you know, agent, principal, and then everything just kind of falls in line. So everything falls in place, and then it trickles up the fake, you know, all the rules and protocols that go along with principal and agent take place as it goes up and down the hierarchy, right?
Well, my answer to your question is I used to talk just like all these other people out there. And then I would say, well, if you go and you need to do this and you say this magic word and you do this, then you can get off, you know. If you prove that you could do this, you can file this paperwork and you can do that. And then I realized, you know, all this is bullshit, because in the end, when you leave that courtroom, what are you? You're right back where you started. You can be summoned back at any time because you're a slave. You're acting in an agency relationship. Now, another word for agency. So before I get to that, I started saying, look, you got a parking ticket, man. Pay the stupid ticket, okay? Just why a cop pulls you over and you start giving this idiot cop who knows nothing about the law, he only knows that he's a revenue collection agent for the municipality that he works for. That's all he is, okay? When it says on his car that he's there to protect and serve, don't be fooled. That was actually a contest that they held in the 50s where they wanted a motto for the frickin' police. You can read this on the LA police website. They looked for a motto that they could put on the side of their frickin' cars to sell themselves, basically. And some guy came up with to protect and serve. That became the motto. It has nothing to do with what police actually are there for. And when it says to protect and serve, they are protecting the municipal corporation from us. They're protecting the people, the private people from the public. And when they serve you summons. They serve you papers. They serve you
tickets.
Warrants. They serve you tickets, bills, exaction, taking something of you. That's how they're serving you. So they are nothing more than revenue collection agents of their principal, which is the municipality they work for. Okay, this is all. It's just a corporation. It's nothing else. In some places, when you leave a city, you're leaving the city limits. In some places, when you leave the city, you're leaving the corporate limits. Just depends on which state you're in that they say corporate limits or count.
And you pointed that out in your Corporation Nation documentary, that on when you were going in, or I don't know whether it was you that was personally traveling, or but you showed a picture, you're leaving or entering the corporation of.
Right. I mean, go down to downtown, and I can go, you know, I can go to the office building that is the corporation, it's called Salt Lake City Corporation. When I got a ticket, it said, make your payment to Salt Lake City Corporation. It's a building downtown that you can go into. That is the municipality. That is the city. Mm-hmm. The city is just a word, and it means municipal corporation. That corporation is housed in that building, and then, of course, all the other buildings that are municipal buildings. That's your city. There is no city. There's a bunch of buildings all crammed together, and for some reason people like to live amongst the crap and the degradation and the corruption of the cities. Okay, fine. But realize that the city is nothing more than a corporation that you can walk into and talk to an agent thereof, and that the police are there to monitor and protect that jurisdiction that they claim, and to collect revenue through exaction or extortion.
That's right.
That's all it is. There's nothing else. And that goes back to Rome. I mean, that the municep is what they would call us. We're the people of the cities. Now, again, I started looking at all the efforts that people go through. No one is ever successful. If they are successful, they get bruises and spend time in jail first. I'm like, why are we doing this? Again, I've admitted my defeat. I've admitted, I mean, he could even say I've admitted I'm a sinner, right? I've admitted defeat. I am a citizen of the United States. I'm not going to deny it anymore. I should say I'm the agent for a citizen of the United States. But now that I've admitted that and I can see what is actually happening, I now know, you see. Now I can go to court if for some reason I'm summoned. And I can, instead of appearing as the person, and the second I do that, I'm whatever they say goes.
You're finished.
I'm dead at that point. So as soon as you appear or quote unquote represent yourself as something you're not, well, then you've just lost. I mean, again, you know, we talked about this, I think, but you're born guilty. You know, when you go to court, you're not innocent or guilty. There's no innocent, you notice. There's guilty, not guilty, or no contest, which are, it doesn't matter which one you claim as long as you claim one of them, which is why you should never claim any of them, because you're innocent. And innocent isn't a choice you've gotten, because you're guilty by your birth.
You were entrapped. You were entrapped into a system that, a created system meant to enslave you. And you had no, and your mother had no, she just delivered you right into the hands of the state, you know, so.
No knowledge.
Without, yeah.
You're never going to win is the point. There is no winning, but, you know, a slave back on the plantation scenario, a slave who gets an extra, you know, half loaf of bread hasn't won anything. He's still a slave. In this arena, in this alternative, creditors and commerce and all this crap out there, if you get money for something because there's a remedy for something that happened to you, you haven't won anything except debt. You've been cursed by getting more money because you hold money sacred. Money is artificial. Therefore, anything sacred is actually a curse. All these rich people, they're not happy. They are not happy. They're miserable people. And you cannot be any other way. It's impossible to be any other way when you have that much money, that much debt. You're holding on to something that forces other people to be poor and in poverty and in hunger. There's no way you can ever be happy if you have wealth. It's never going to happen. And that's what we go, that's what we're all trained to go after. But the only way you can have wealth, the only way you can have more than others, is if others have less than they need. And that is not the quote-unquote Christian way. That's why there would be, you know, that's why true equality, true equity, in other words, can only happen in that scenario, that Christian, if you will, scenario. It's never going to happen. Only through pure charity, with no money, with nothing that you can call wealth, Will there ever be peace on earth? It's just never going to happen any other way. So,
yeah.
So here is the answer to your question. If for some reason I have to go to court, I'm going to appear as the agent. I'm not going to appear in person. I'm going to immediately go, and I'm going to say, hi, I'm appearing as agent. Now, another word for agent is attorney. Now, the important part about that is that an attorney can't get in trouble for his client's actions. Attorney representing the person of another man, the attorney cannot be put in jail for the decision of the court upon that person.
So what does the judge do when you say that? What would a judge say? Like you said, and it's what you need to do. Does this judge look at you and say, you figured it out?
Yeah, well, that's just it. They start treating you different. They start treating you with a little more respect. When you actually can show that you have confidence, you know the law. You know how it works. You know how the whole system's a fraud. He knows the whole system's a fraud. He knows he's an he's acting in an administrative capacity, which is a de facto illegitimate position in an executive branch version of the judicial. The judicial basically doesn't exist. It's all a game of confidence. That's why they call it a con game or a confidence game. When you go and so we talked about this on my show, and I had one guy actually email me, and he said, I did what you said, and I went in and I talked to the clerk, the court clerk, right? And I filed my case as the agent for this person, and I told them I'm acting agent, or acting executor, if you will, acting agent, right? And they went crazy. They said, "Oh, hold on, we gotta go get someone else," and they dismissed the case. They wouldn't even let him go into court.
Oh dear,
the case got dismissed before it even got into court, because here's a guy who actually knows what the hell's happening, or at least he's pretending to. And they scared the court so much that they let him go. There's a case where I don't know how to address the sexual orientation of this person, but calls himself Kate of Gaia.
Oh, I've heard of that person.
Right. Well, there's a wonderful video online. It's on YouTube, and nobody seems to grasp what actually transpires. He thinks he has a victory, no idea what's really happening. He gets up there and he wants the first question is, who is summoned to the court? Who is it that's summoned to the court? Well, it's John Smith, right? And only John Smith or John Smith agent is going to be welcome, or attorney is going to be welcome to answer on behalf of who is summoned, right? So he stands up and says, you know, I am not that person. I am the single name Bob, or whatever he said, whatever his name is. The judge, the judge actually senses that this guy, not only does he know what he's doing, but the people he's there with know a little bit about the law, enough to make a stink. And the judge seems to actually be trying to help him, and I think he took that in the opposite way. The judge tells him, he gives him the key, he hands him the keys to the kingdom, basically. He says, are you John Smith? No, I am just John of the family this, and all this crap that people say, right? Because they don't know. And that goes back and forth. And finally, the judge says, oh, okay. You are either John Smith or you are his agent. And right there, he just told him, if he would have just said, okay, well, I'm his agent, then the whole thing would have turned around. But instead, he was nervous. He had adrenaline pumping through him. He didn't know what he was doing, although he's trying to pretend that he did. And he got the judge to actually walk out of the court, because he felt threatened, and because the judge walked out of the court, they thought that the judge had abandoned court and that they had won the case automatically, which is an untruism, another patriot mythology crap. But in reality, what the judge had done was actually offer him the correct legal language, and they're only interested in the correct language, because that has to be spoken on the record, right? So the guy told him, hey, you're either appearing here as the person or you're here as the agent for that person, which means you're actually appearing as everybody says they want to appear as the man. I'm the man, Clint. I'm not the person. I'm the man. I'm not the person. Well, what that means is that you're the agent. You're the man who's acting in agency to the principal who owns that status that you're operating in, right? So, again, if you understand that and you start reading a little bit about agency, and you get, there's the treatise on agency that's like, I don't know, it's like, what is it, 2,100 pages long or something? then you'll start to understand how things work a little better, what your place is in society, which is purely an agentic relationship. You're an agency. Nothing. There's no other. There's no tricks. There's nothing else. There's no. You're an agent. Okay. You're either appearing in the person or you're in the agent of the or the attorney of the person. That which appears for something else. That's it.
So I mean, doing that, and the example that you gave with the guy who went in and said, "I'm acting an agent," and then they just didn't even see him. They just let him go, or he just walked out of there without having to be seen.
Just walked out because Bob Smith could not be found, or Bob Smith's agent could not be found. This guy just kept saying, "No, I'm this. We're not looking for that. Sit down." No, right? It was just you know, you realize how stupid. I mean, I say that with all of my heart. How stupid some of this patriot, whatever you call it, these gurus who go to court. How stupid their actions are, because again, when you realize court procedure, you study court procedure, you study the chains of evidence and custody and all that stuff, you realize, hey, the court can only operate, the case can only be heard if what is on trial, the subject matter that is on trial is there. If that's a person, great. If the subject matter is 20 bales of hay, you know, you can find court cases, it's kind of funny, where it's the state against 90 bales of hay, or the state against, you know, a truck full of soda or something like that, right? So the subject matter doesn't have to be it can be a person, place, or thing.
But yeah, it just blows me away that how many lawyers there are for a system that is completely fraudulent.
Yeah.
I mean, I, just sitting here and all the my different you know, just my through my journey, you know, doing IT, you just seeing how many, you know, lawyers there are. Whether it be for, I think that there's a law group that I dealt with, you know, just working on systems for the elderly, elder care or elder law, right? And I mean, you just look at it and you just think like, did this thing just take on a life of its own? Is it something that was put together and that they knew from the onset that it was just gonna mushroom cloud into every aspect of our life? Did these Masons, and that was a very powerful thing in what I was listening to yesterday of yours, and even Jack, he's annoyed with lawyers as well. So as I'm going through it, the Masons, all but like three of them were master Masons. And so did they know that when they're putting this whole thing together that it was going to be, I mean, it's so long ago, but did they know that it was going to be what it was? Did they know that there it was going to be them, and then it was going to be the subjects and the commoners? Were they aware of it at that point? I mean, obviously, a lot of those founding fathers were, you know, of the blood of, you know, the aristocracy.
First of all, this dates back, you know, the ends of court and all that. When you
even
try to
further, right?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back so far. Essentially, witchcraft and lawyers, witches and lawyers, were basically in the same class. Mm. They did a different type of magic, but they're in the same class. They are feared and dreaded. They were not allowed into the societies of the, you know, the original colonies that were set up. They were not allowed to practice their witchcraft in the colonies. They were feared just as much as any witch. You can you know, you can go and you can read. I'm trying to think of. I've got a great quote by. There's the guy who used to do the radio. He was so revered, and he did the radio about the devil, If I Were the Devil. Mm-hmm. But I can't think of his name right now. But he does this thing on on lawyers, on attorneys, and the history in like Salem and stuff like that.
Right.
And basically how they snuck themselves, they basically snuck their way in, and that's when things always start to change, is because
Paul Harvey? Was it Paul Harvey?
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Nice job.
Thank you. I went to, figure, just take a second and type it into the think box. So he said, if I were the devil, that's what his,
That was one of it. If I were the devil is a great one. If you can go to YouTube and just type in, if I were the devil, and listen to that. But his other one was basically, you mind if I read it? It was for radio anyway. So, he used to call his show, Paul Harvey used to call his show The Rest of the Story.
Mm-hmm.
This was from 2005. If there is a stain on the record of our forefathers, a dark hour in the earliest history of the American colonies, it would be the hanging of the witches at Salem. But that was a pinpoint in place and time, a brief lapse into hysteria. For the most part, our 17th century colonists were scrupulously fair, even in their fear. There was one group of people they feared with reason, a society, you might say, whose often insidious craft had claimed a multitude of victims ever since the Middle Ages in Europe. One group of people were hated and feared from Massachusetts Bay to Virginia. The magistrate would not burn them at the stake, although surely a great many of the colonists would have recommended such a solution. Our forefathers were baffled by them. In the first place, where did they come from? Which is the question you're asking. What just happened? Sorry.
No worries.
You press one button. Of all who sailed from England to Plymouth in 1620, not one of them was aboard. Vermin, that's what the colonists called them. Parasites who fed on human misery, spreading sorrow and confusion wherever they went. Destructive, they were called. And still, they were permitted to coexistence with the colonists. For a while, anyway. Of course, there were colonial laws prohibiting the practice of their infamous craft. Somehow a way was always found around all those laws. Hey, they were lawyers, after all. In 1641, Massachusetts Bay Colony took a novel approach to the problem. The governors attempted to starve the devils out of existence through economic exclusion. They were denied wages, and thereby it was hoped that they would perish. Four years later, Virginia followed the example of Massachusetts Bay, and for a while it seemed that the dilemma had been resolved. It had not. Somehow the parasites managed to survive, and the mere nearness of them made the colonists' skin crawl. In 1658 in Virginia, the final solution, banishment, exile. The treacherous ones were cast out of the colony at last. After decades of enduring the physical gloom, the sun came out and the birds sang, and all was right with the world, and the elation continued for a generation. I'm not sure why the Virginians eventually allowed the outcasts to return, but they did. In 1680, after 22 years, the despised ones were readmitted to the colony on the condition that they be subjected to the strictest of surveillance. How soon we forget. For indeed, over the next half century or so, the imposed restrictions were slowly, quietly swept away, and those whose treachery had been so feared since the Middle Ages ultimately took their place in society. You see, the vermin that once infested colonial America, the parasites who preyed on the misfortunes of their neighbors until ultimately they were officially banished from Virginia, those dreaded, despised outcasts, masters of confusion, were lawyers.
Wow. So, I mean, we're talking about years and years of just created and controlled bastardization of natural law.
Right, which is to say scripture. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Again, all these different terms and things that you hear out there, from the trivium to the natural law to, all of them, that come from the Bible. And if you can separate the source from the thing, then you can change the thing.
And so it makes sense that what percentage of lawyers are politicians, if not all of them, I guess.
Yeah, you know, they did a thing. I think it was I believe it was in the 40-something percentile or 50 percentile that it was attorneys in Congress, and the rest are basically, you know, oil men or pharmaceutical
people. Lobbyist politicians. They're their own lobbyists.
Yes, corporate guys, you know.
Right.
Ugh. It's pretty pathetic. But if you start to think about it, though, it makes sense because the Bible is nowhere to be found. It can't be used. It can't be used in court. You swear on it, but it can't be used, right? You're swearing on the Bible is basically blasphemy to God. You're swearing to something artificial, something that's against the scriptures.
I guess that makes sense why they included that.
Right. I think it's a practical joke. You know,
it's nice if you sit there and you'd be like, do you sort of like, are you serious? And if you said that, then you would look like the one that was like anti-God when it's actually them, sure, you know, sure, inducing you into doing something ridiculous, but then they turn it around on you.
Well, yeah, and nobody, you know, nobody ever says no. That's what gets me is everybody is more, you know, they go in there and all of a sudden they become into court. They have the fear and they just do whatever they're told. They put their hand right on that Bible or they raise their hand and swear the oath, which is basically the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
As the Bible says, take no oaths ever, never take an oath, period, end of story. Right? So you got all these patriots, right? All these so-called Christians who are just, you know, absolutely enchanted by themselves and their love of country, their love of the oath and all. And none of them understand what they're doing when they do. It's just amazing to me that we've been so tricked.
Yeah. Because they got a bloodliner that tells them that the Constitution is relevant and it's going to save us. And, you know, and so, I mean, you said on the podcast that a lot of these people that came over on the ships or the, Jones says all the time that his parents were involved in, or his, you know, predecessors were involved in, coming over on, you know, just, and then it just makes sense that he is gotta be of this bloodline because he keeps perpetuating information that, you know, you obviously know and I'm learning now is complete bullshit.
Yeah. And let's, you know, I'll be honest with you. I think I'm probably of that bloodline. I think a lot of people are of that bloodline, but the whole system is set up to take that away because it doesn't matter whether you have the blood or not. It matters whether you're using it, right? Because most of us have no idea of our family. You have ancestors
on the outskirts. You're on the outskirts of the bloodline.
Well, you know, it's again a lot. So the way it works, a lot of people get confused because they say, "Well, you know, everybody's related to everybody. Oh, it's one big happy
freaking." I know, right? That's what I hear.
It's just total bullshit. And while that may be true in some weird, you know, ancient way, has nothing to do with what we're talking about again, because when this country was founded, it was specific people. It wasn't all people. It was specific people. So you're going to tell me that everybody can prove their direct descendancy from one of those people? I don't think so.
It'd be hard to do, but it can be done.
Because that would mean that all people who were in that compact were all the people in the United States. But we had slaves, we had indentured servants, we had people from all different countries, all different walks of life. No, absolutely not. There was that people who got together and created that thing, and then there was all the other people here. So no, you cannot prove your direct descendancy. Absolutely not. You might be related to them. You might have some weird offshoot, but that doesn't mean that you can claim to be one of them. So no, everybody is not related to each other in the legal sense, in the genealogical or heraldry sense. Mm-hmm. You can't just go, I mean, you can read about there's all kinds of clubs and shit out there. One of them is about the Charlemagne. And it says very specifically, you know, it says a lot of people can show their connection, their heritage to the European bloodlines, but very few can actually prove their connection to Charlemagne. They all can put Charlemagne in their line because of some intermingling at some point, but that doesn't mean you can project a fabled genealogy that says you are a direct descendant and have the rights of that bloodline. This is very important. Just like I can't, you know, most people can't go to the Queen of England and say, hey, here's my blood, give me a title. You know, it just doesn't work that way. So one of the documents, I have a few documents. One of them is called A Complete Guide to Heraldry by Arthur Charles Fox Davies, mm-hmm. published in 1909, and it's about this country. All right. So A Complete Guide to Heraldry, you look it up. Arthur Charles Fox Davies. You can find a PDF of it. Okay, one of the things it says, well, I'll tell you what, how about we go to the introduction and just read, you know, too frequently it is the custom to regard the study of the science of armory, remember we're talking about the right to bear armory, arms, too frequently is the custom to regard the study of the science of armory as that of a subject which is passed beyond the limits of practical politics. Again, he's talking to us. Heraldry has been termed the shorthand of history, but nevertheless, the study of that shorthand has been approached too often as if it were but the study of a dead language. The result has been that too much faith has been placed in the works of older writers, which dicta have been accepted as both unquestionably correct at the date they wrote and as a consequence equally binding at the present day. Anyway, it just goes on and it gives you the sort of the history of how heraldry, armory, basically, is not a dead science. It's very much a living reality, and it's how our nation is set. One of the quotes in there, I mean, here it is right here. They tell you, there are few families in this country outside the Roman Catholic aristocracy whose marriages are not quite so haphazard as are those of other people. In other words, they married specifically to keep the bloodline pure, which we do not, because we marry for quote-unquote love, which is an inducement to contract.
Yes.
So there are very few families in this country outside that Roman aristocracy who keep pure marriages who can show that all their 16 great-great-grandparents were in their own right entitled to bear arms. This is the true definition of the proof of seized quarters, which is an old term that means that it's a heraldry term. So again, there it is. It's telling you what the Second Amendment actually means. Very few people can actually show that they own the bloodline right to bear arms. This is what the private people of the states are doing. They're bearing their heraldry, their arms. That is how they remain free of the United States arms, which is its, if you look up the arms of the United States, you'll see that it is its flag and seal. Not a weapon, not a cannon, not a bomb, but its flag and seal. The flag and seal are the arms that we bear, which is why we have no reserved rights. We have the right to bear arms, but we're not using it because we're bearing the arms of the United States. If we're bearing the arms of our bloodline, and that bloodline happens to be this bloodline, then we're in a different state. We can become landholders. We can, you know, go through that process and all that stuff. It's one solution that I'm not, you know, you become a master instead of a slave, essentially. But I don't think it's enough.
Right.
So, you know,
it's a move in the right direction, but
yeah. I understand this now. I don't question it anymore. I've got too much evidence to possibly question You know, I understand that. So I don't pretend like I'm not their subject. I don't pretend like I don't pledge allegiance to them. I pledge allegiance to the flag. Well, that means I'm pledging allegiance to those who created the flag, which wasn't me. Right? I'm defeated. I know that now. Now it's time to spiritually awaken myself. And that's what I'm trying to accomplish, is to say, look, we've respected this shit for way, way too long. We've given powers to people who don't deserve them, who've done nothing but be born into it. They don't deserve, there's absolutely no reason we should be respecting these flattering titles. And by the way, when we're talking about, again, these fabled genealogies, this is a fable. When you look at the history or the story of every nation, ours is the founding fathers, you know, you can look at the Crusade, you can look at all kinds of different histories. But when we're looking at the foundations, the story or the his story of this country, it's the same exact thing as looking at the history of the Bible, the fabled history, the fabled genealogy of the Bible. We choose to honor the gods that we call the founding fathers, the magistrates. And remember, Aristotle said it best when he said the reason for constituting or creating a constitution is to select the magistracy. Okay, that means the gods, basically, of the nation. Okay, so our fabled history, our parable, if you will, our authoritative story or history is the founding fathers. This romanticized bullshit about a bunch of Freemasons who got together and created something for themselves to enslave everybody else. That is our parable. That is our scripture. That is our knowledge on how, and that is why the people are our God. This body politic that we call the people. That's who we pledge allegiance to. That's whose law we follow. They created. They are the creator. They are our gods. Like I said, you're going to have a god. No matter what you call yourself, you want to call yourself atheist, you want to call yourself agnostic, you want to call yourself this, you want to call yourself an anarchist. I don't give a shit. You're a Christian because you're born in the fucking Christian nation. It's so pathetic.
By default, yeah. Right. They've just done a spectacular job in making us feel like we're so part of this whole thing. You're just, you know, like with the 4th of July and Veterans Day, where they, you know, where they actually pretend to give a shit about the people that they've sent off to their wars to die.
It's part of our fable. That's all there is to it. And you know, we have to understand the Bible is also a fable. We can't ignore that fact. We can't ignore that it's an allegory, a parable. We just like we can't ignore the allegory and parable of the founding fathers. We cannot ever rely on history to create our story. You know, that's the fucked up part about it, is that we're so, you know, all the laws that we go by were created by dead people. I mean, think about that. All the history, that's all by dead people, right? So you think about that, it's like kind of crazy when you start considering that. But we love the history, love the fable, and thus we live by that fable instead of the fable we should be listening, or the parable we should be listening to. And remember, a parable, don't look at that as I'm blasphemy or I'm saying something evil, or no, it's a moral story told to guide future generations. That's what a parable is. That's what the Bible is. It is a moral story, period. End of story. And if you're not following that, you're going to follow some parable. You're going to follow some story, because you don't just come up with this shit on your own.
So are there certain, like, rules that they have to abide by when in our enslavement? Like, they have to let us know what they're going to do they have to.
There are no.
I mean, secrets. You got the Bible, and you know, obviously, with the Scofield Reference Bible, how that was bastardized to ultimately create, you know, the Zio world, Israel. What couldn't they have done more to just completely abolish it? I mean, they have so much control. I mean, I look at this, and I've given so much. In my mind, the power that this system has, or these people, you know, at one time not realizing who's really in charge. And then within the last year, just finding out, hey, this is just a big one, big family affair. And, you know, when it gets down to blood, it gets down to, you know, the negative, the O negative, the AB negative, which is 15%, 15 to 20% of the population, which I think you alluded to in the podcast that they're trying to expand that on some level. But then again, it also connects with the 80 to 85% of the world depopulation agenda that we've heard, you know, Mr. Jones and others speak of. Couldn't they have done or why haven't they done more with all the power and all the money and all these, you know, groups and different organizations that they've created as a false opposition? Why haven't they done more to just abolish that? Is it, you know, I mean, obviously they want to create the one world religion, the one world government, and all that stuff. Do you just think it's just over time that they could have done it already?
No, it has to be voluntary. If there's one thing I've learned in all of this is that it has to be voluntary. The trick is to make people not realize that they're volunteering.
They have to manufacture the consent and have us consent to it, even if there were lies and deceptions that led to that consent.
And you have to get rid of the foundation of the moral law before that can ever happen, which they've done beautifully. This is when we look up the word devil. We find that a devil is referring to a man, but it's referring to what it calls an evil genius, right? So devilry is what attorneys do, actually. If you surprisingly, I mean, I was really surprised when I you know, what did William Shakespeare said? The first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers. And he meant the title of lawyer. He didn't mean the men. He meant the actual title of lawyer, the power that's given to the flattering title. Mm-hmm. So when you look it up, you know, you find advocatus diaboli, the devil's advocate, right? The devil's horns is a legal term, but deviling is a term used in London of a barrister or an attorney recently admitted to the bar, who assists a junior barrister in his professional work without compensation and without appearing in any way in the matter. So that's called deviling. When you apprentice for a young devil or attorney, you are actually deviling. Okay, well, where does that come from? Let's, you know, I don't know if you ever heard me read this on air, but there was a website. They actually took down the page when we started talking about it. That page is gone. But I actually have the original document it came from.
Nice.
So, yeah, you can't hide it. But this is from a website in Scotland. It's called The Advocates. Of course, advocate and attorney are the same thing, basically. Here's what it's – I just got to read it, man, because this blew my mind when I read this. And again, it's from – I'll read you the document it's from first. I copied it from advocates.org.uk. You can check that out. But it explains the act of deviling, as was just defined in Blacks. But it's excerpted from a publication taken from page 111 called The Devil's Handbook, 12th edition.
You sent that to me.
2014, 2015. I think I did, yeah. Published by the Faculty of Advocates, Advocates Library, Parliament House, Edinburgh, EH11RF. So it's right, you know, this is a government document, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's what it says. Deviling, as the period of pupillage or training to become an advocate is generally known, lasts between 8 and 9 months and comprises a mix of skills, training courses, and time spent working with a devil master. Who's the devil master? It's the experienced attorney who teaches the young new attorney, which are called devils, the devil master. The compulsory skills training courses, which are described in more detail in the following pages, are spread across the deviling period and last for about 9 weeks in total. For the balance of the period of deviling, devils work closely with their devil masters. All devils have a principal devil master who is a practicing member of the junior bar of at least 7 years standing and working primarily in civil practice. Devils will also spend part of the time with another devil master practicing in the criminal courts. And many devils spend a short period of time with a third devil master working in a different aspect of civil work from his or her principal devil master. In order to take a devil master must be approved by the dean of faculty. The clerk of faculty maintains a list of approved devil masters who may be contacted by email or via the clerk's office. Devils are expected to attend court with their devil masters and to attend consultations, etc., etc., with their devil master is involved during the period of deviling. Devils also carry out work for the free representation unit, etc., etc. At the end of the deviling period, a devil's admission to the faculty is dependent on certification by his or her principal devil master that the devil is a fit and proper person to be an advocate, and that the devil has been involved in a wide range of work in the course of his or her deviling. A devil's competence in a number of aspects of written and oral advocacy is assessed during deviling, and if a devil is assessed and not to be competent, he or she will be admitted to the faculty. Now, they are saying this with an absolute straight face, okay? This is from the Faculty of Advocates. It's a body of independent lawyers who have been admitted to practice as advocates before the courts of Scotland. Their records date back as far as 1532, when the College of Justice was established by an act of Scottish Parliament, though its origins are believed to predate that event.
Did they just proudly call themselves devils?
Absolutely. Abso-frickin-lutely. That's why they made that movie, The Devil's Advocate, man. You want to hear some serious wick shit? Listen,
good. That was you know, in a sense.
Listen to the monologue at the end of that movie, and you know when he talks about
I'm a fan of man.
You know, everybody's gonna be an attorney, basically, and we are all attorneys. You got to realize that. I said we're all agents.
We're all
acting attorneys. We are all acting the part, so we're all devils. That's the thing. You see, why I say it needs to be voluntary, this whole thing, they have to slowly increment. Nothing works suddenly, right? Wars, all that. Nothing can be changed suddenly. It all has to happen incrementally. That's why you see these slow changes, the slow degradation of entertainment, the slow degradation of school, the slow degradation of everything, right? That is the only way that they can do this. And that's why these guys, their legacies are very minimal. And they understand that. They're not, I don't think they're interested in making great changes in their lifetimes. They're all, George Bush was a great actor who was a great orator before he became president, probably one of the best, which is why he became governor. You know, you listen to his early speeches and he's the most fluent speaker you'll ever listen to, very intelligent. Then you listen to him as president, he sounds like a bumbling idiot, right? That's acting. Mm-hmm. He's going to be very, very highly esteemed because he actually pulled off some of the worst tyranny in history while people actually still believed he was stupid. That shows how stupid we are.
True. Okay?
So, again, man, what? Think about it. How does the devil operate? How does the devil master operate? How is it that we are induced into things? It's always through contracts. It's always through volume. Devil can't do anything to you. Satan can't do shit to us, can't influence anything unless we volunteer, unless we contract. That's how the story goes. We are all volunteering for all of this.
There's no victims, just volunteers. Yes, I've heard that so many times.
So if you can get a whole society to do exactly what we're doing, you can lead them like lemmings off a cliff, even though that's kind of a fallacy. But, you know, you can lead them anywhere. You can lead them to their own demise. You can cause them to do the stupidest crap. I mean, it's just amazing what they can force all of us to give a crap about Paris Hilton and Kim, whatever. Right. I mean, they that's how they steer us. And while we're looking at that, we're not looking at the Bible. While we're busy looking at TV or working our asses off because we can't pay for food, we're not reading the Bible. And we should be reading the Bible every day.
And we spoke about this a number of times. Understanding it is just so, you know, being able to decipher. It's one thing to read something. It's something totally different to be able to comprehend what you've just read. And I think that's one of the, I mean, of many fascinating things about you, Clint, is that your ability to be able to understand this. I mean, it was purposefully, I don't even know if it was purposely written to be confusing or, but you've done a masterful job. You know, you're the greatest attorney that I know.
That's part of that ego killing thing. You know, nobody's ever going to kill their ego totally, I don't think. But when you start looking at things, when you're not searching just so that you can, you know, put a little cherry on top of your own pie, when you're looking at things and you're only seeking for what they actually mean, not according to your own worldview, not according to what you think is right or wrong. Because what you think is right or wrong doesn't matter when it's someone else's system. So you have to realize that. Again, realize you're defeated. And let's start figuring out why we're defeated. Let's not read it so that, well, maybe I can make some money on it. Maybe I can cheat my taxes. Maybe I can avoid something. Maybe I can. No, start reading it as a slave. And you're going to have a totally different point of view than if you're reading it as some arrogant idiot trying to sell a product to somebody or trying to convince someone that they can have some remedy, you know, make some, whatever it is, whatever the gurus are selling. And I started going that route. I started going that route where I'm like, wow, I could do something with this. And then I realized, no, this is so much deeper. It's so much more of a spiritual journey than it is just an educative type of thing. It's much more than that. And until you get to that point, I don't think you can learn. Until you can, and you can learn besides yourself instead of always putting yourself into the middle of the equation and trying to get some gain or a profit from it, then you're never going to be able to learn.
You know what's fascinating is my own, you know, personal journey, watching little bits and pieces of your development, and I could just imagine you sitting there saying, you know, after you doing the Utah outreach, We Are Change, and all those things that you were involved in, and just to get to the point where you spend, and I've done this, you know, you spend like maybe 5 or 6 months working on something or thinking about something or talking about something, and then you come to a realization that, oh my God, that was totally not a waste of time. It was part of a growing process, but you have to be like, all right, well, time to start over again.
Sure.
Or time to, like, you think that you're taking leaps and strides, like you've taken 5 steps, like you've learned, you know, 5 of the most important things that you thought were legitimate, and then you wind up taking 4 steps back, but you made one, you took that step forward.
You have to admit to yourself, you know, I shudder sometimes when I go back and see some of my old blog entries, you know, and I even have a little disclaimer on my blog, in the about section. I'm like, look, in 3 years, I'm going to have a whole new set of knowledge. It's probably going to alter today's knowledge. So what I say today may very well be illegitimate, because I didn't understand something fully. I'm parroting something I heard 10 years ago from Alex Jones, or I'm doing something stupid because I heard it and I believed it instead of actually verifying it. So yeah, absolutely. That's part of that ego death. You know, that's part of that admitting your wrongness in so many ways. I did a thing called Killing Your Straw Man long time ago, which was basically just listening to everybody else and putting it all together in a way that could be cohesive. And it wasn't that it was wrong. Again, right and wrong sort of go out the window because there really is no right. I should say there's no left or right, right? There's no debate on a lot of this self-evident type of truth, right? Nature is self-evident. Therefore, God is self-evident, right? Creation, if you will. You have to put all those things sort of in the same category. So the whole Bible is about self-evidence. There's only one truth, and that's that which is self-evident. You are self-evident. Your name is not self-evident. Your person is not self-evident. Your numbers, your marks, your signs, you know, those are not self-evident. But you, my friend, are a self-evident creation of God, as they say. And you learn to accept these, you know, these terms that you hate. But you hate it when you hear these religious people say, you learn to accept them for what they are. When you're talking about creation, you're just talking about nature. I mean, what is the evidence of God but creation, right?
Yeah.
So, or any creator for that matter, it's the creation. So, you know, you say you're part of creation, you're saying you're part of source. You're saying you're original. You're not part of something fictional. That makes you... that makes you unidentifiable. It makes you not be able to be summoned because you don't have a name that's assigned to you that you respect and that you love and that you use to gain in mammon, right? You start to understand what these terms actually mean, and you start to accept them in a whole different way. But when you still, when I hear the typical corporate, you know, Christian speak, I want to punch them in the face because they're speaking empty words that mean nothing. I have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. No, you don't. There's no such thing. You either are Christ or you're not. You're Christ-like or you're not. There's no personal relationship. There's no nothing. You're either acting the part because you respect it or you're not. Don't hand me this bunch of crap that you hear and you parrot because you think that's the right thing to do, because you've been fooled by these churches that are corporations. I got another quote in here. I know that it says that you can never have religious freedom as long as churches are registered with the state. Never, ever have religious freedom as long as churches are registered with the state, which means they're incorporated.
Yeah, and at that one time you said you can't have government without the church, and you can't have church without government. They are the separation of church and state, and anyone talking about it is, you know, well, it's just full shit.
Married, what happens when you're married and you get separated? Are you still married?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Not divorced. They're not annulled. They're just separated, right? So... it's just like that definition we read in the beginning. They're separated. You either are or you aren't. The law can't force you to be to follow that law. It can only force you to follow its false law, its created law, that which is opposed to it. Right? That's the trope. It's true, because when you read the Constitution. It's clear as day if you know what the terms mean. And it says, we the people ordain and establish this Constitution. Well, that is the establishment. That is the church and the state. Ordain is something that can only be a religious term. And establish is something that's only a de facto military term.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the creation of the church and state right there. I mean, it's right there in two words. You have it ordained by the cardinals, the priests, the priest class, if you will, which were always the you know, what's the queen? She's the head of the church. Right? So So you have a nation that's ordained by God and established militarily. There's the difference. One part of it recognizes in its common law the spiritual law, the moral law. It's part of the common law. And if you're living privately, that's what you have to follow. Or you have the public. You have the established military de facto for all the unregenerate folks like us out there who accept citizenship as if it's perfectly normal, except our voluntary servitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another concept that is important, I see we're at the end here, but I said there's no secrets, right? Everything's open. Everything. There is no knowledge that is hidden from you. There is only knowledge that is sidetracked from you because you're being provided with sports and entertainment, just like a good goyim, you know, should be.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is hidden. And when you look at these words like esoteric,
right.
That's one of those words again that you hear all these people, your David Icke's and all these, you know, they're this esoteric knowledge. That is such a bullshit word. You know what it means?
No. Offhand.
Private.
Right. Well, I remember seeing something called the esoteric agenda, which probably was some kind of zeitgeist thing, and I know that you made comment on that.
So think about what that means, a private agenda. These are the private people. We're the public people. We're the exoteric or external people. They're the internal people. That's why they have their internal revenue service. These words, they're not so mysterious or secretive. Their meanings aren't so, you know, hidden from us. When you realize esoteric, that just means private. When I keep, the only way I can ever have power over another is to keep my information private and make yours public. That's all it means.
Yes.
It's not anything, you know, ooh, esoteric. No. Nothing is hidden from us. The only thing that is kept from us or taken from us is our will. Our desires are rerouted into things, like I said, like sports, for God's sake, or, you know, music or movies or whatever it is, fashion, right? We never are focusing on the true nature of what we're supposed to be. And that's we're in the perfect slave system, if you ask me. Because what's the saying? You know, the best slave is one who doesn't know he's a slave.
Exactly.
None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free.
That's right. But, you know, with the artificial toys that we get enable us to think falsely and not understanding, you know. I mean, you get to drive around, you get to, you know, own a home, you get to, but all of these things have been worked into their agenda, their creation. You get a home because the banks are there to, you know, provide that to you. That, like when Obama said, if you have a business, you didn't build that.
Well, that's an excuse too, right? All of this, what you realize eventually is that all these things are inducements to contract.
Mm-hmm.
And what are people saying? Well, how do I travel? How do I travel? I want to travel. Oh, I don't want to be free because I want to travel. That doesn't even make sense, right? So it's an inducement to stay contracted. I have to have a license to travel. You don't have to have a license to travel. Actually, if you look at your DMV, it says you, if you're a private citizen, you have the easement, the right to travel without a license. You don't need a registration or a license to travel as a private individual. It says that right in the DMV codes if you look real hard.
I'm going to need to figure out something so that I can participate in the Canadian gathering, if you will, this summer. I would look forward to that for sure. We got probably about like 30 seconds left here. So thanks to Clint being with us again today. You can find World Without Gray over at Reality Blogger, blogger with 1G .wordpress.com. It's a 5.5 hour compilation of genealogy. And Clint, stay on the line with me. Thanks, everybody. Put the MK scope on ya. If the MK hits you, it's going to be a wrap.
20 rounds a minute trying to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary. For the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell uranium to Iran. That's enriched. That's a bitch. Now we got.